welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line from St. Louis is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, you're back in home turf in seventh heaven. You've picked up baseball tickets, playoff tickets for your beloved Cardinals, and you were fishing yesterday. That's why we are a day late with this program.
True enough, Rob. We hit the big catfish on the Mississippi River yesterday, saw some ball games last week, and waiting on ball games to happen at the end of the week. Cardinals once again finish with the best record in baseball. What else is new?
Indeed, and you must be feeling pretty good about their chances going into the playoffs, Mickey.
Of course, but you never know.
Mm-hmm. Baseball, it's an unpredictable, funny game at times. We've been doing a string of shows, Mickey, focused on toxic metals. You wanted to continue that theme with this program. We'll look at selenium, number 34 in the periodic table, right next to arsenic. Tell us about its properties, its characteristics.
Well, it's a non-metal. It's soft gray, but it does have a metallic luster. So as you work your way down the periodic table with sulfur on top and tellurium below, tellurium is obviously a metal. And it's flanked on the left by the aforementioned poisonous arsenic, and it's flanked on the right by a gas that we talked about previously, and that's bromine, which is poisonous also.
Mm-hmm.
Low melting point, low boiling point. It transmits electricity dependent on ambient light, so that was one of the first uses.
Yeah, and the history of selenium, Mickey, I believe it was first discovered by a couple of chemists in Sweden, is that correct?
That's correct, 1817. It's rare as a native element or pure compounds. It basically replaces sulfur in metallic sulfide ores. It has six stable isotopes. It's toxic, especially as selenium compounds, in large doses to humans and animals, but it is also essential for enzyme function in all life in mammals.
Okay, now when we've talked about previous toxic elements in the other programs, Mickey, we found that women were often putting this stuff on their faces for makeup way back when in Egypt. Selenium doesn't fit that bill in any form, does it?
Not to my knowledge. Nothing mm-hmm. I was able to research indicated that. Its main uses, it became used, early uses, with a couple of names that everybody will recognize in the 1870s, Siemens, mm-hmm. a German guy, and Alexander Graham Bell used, it was used in early photo phones, and by the 1930s to 1970s, it was used for its semiconductor properties, especially in rectifiers. Those uses have kind of gone away.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's used about 30% in metallurgy, and that's mainly by the Chinese in production of electrolytic manganese in the electrowinning of manganese. It's also used in copper and lead alloys. It's used to decolorize glass.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of glass has a green or yellowish green tint. Selenium has a red coloration, so it balances that out and makes glass basically transparent. It's used in agricultural industry. I've already told you it's the essential trace nutrient, so supplemental in animal feeds,
mm-hmm.
used in chemicals and pigments, and the aforementioned electrical uses.
Okay, Mickey, you've just outlined a fairly extensive list of how selenium is used today. Is there growing demand for selenium, and where are the major sources of production?
Well, I would have to say that based on my research that demand is fairly flat. The reported production is pretty opaque. Many countries do not report their selenium production. For instance, two of the major producers would be China and the U.S. It is mainly a byproduct of copper smelting and, to a lesser extent, other metals. So in the U.S., the Asarco smelter in Amarillo, Texas, is the only U.S. producer, so the production is withheld. The countries that do report about 2,000 tons per year from Germany, Japan, lesser amounts from Belarus and Russia, but it's estimated there's 3,000 to 3,500 tons a year actually produced.
So the world is well supplied, it sounds like.
Well, and that's not a lot of selenium, but it is a byproduct of smelting. So as long as you're smelting metals, especially copper, you're going to have this ongoing supply of selenium. Mm-hmm. Now, with the increase in copper oxide production worldwide at the expense of sulfide ores, you do not recover selenium in the electrowinning of copper. So that has resulted in less selenium growth into the market, but as copper production grows, sulfide production particularly, we would see, I think, a ready supply of selenium. Interestingly enough, the price from, say, in the early 2000s was less than $10 a pound. Mm-hmm. That jumped in from 2004 to 2010 to about $30 a pound, and then it jumped again in 2011 to about $6,500 per pound. And this increased price has basically been driven by the Chinese demand in the production of electrolytic manganese.
Yeah, is it a is it an element that is hard to keep track of in terms of price movement, because it's there's not an open market for it, is there?
No, there is not, and so it's a byproduct of smelting, and rest assured that any producers of selenium-rich ores and certain copper ores, certain gold ores even, are enriched in selenium, that they don't get paid by the refineries or the smelters on this. So from that point of view, it's a very opaque market.
Mickey, earlier in the interview, you said that selenium is toxic in a large amount. What is exactly considered to be a safe amount in terms of human intake, though? Because I found a very interesting quote in my research, and this is from a biologist at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says that, quote, selenium has the narrowest band of any toxic chemical between what is safe and what is toxic. So it sounds like with this element, we could be walking a fairly fine line. Is that correct?
Well, that's actually news to me, and so that's news that I will add into my knowledge of the element. Here's what I do know, that 800 milligrams per day is considered toxic to humans. Mm-hmm. It often occurs in specific plants. So there are specific plants that take up selenium from soils. Mm-hmm. It is a necessary trace element nutrient, as we mentioned, for all mammal life, and especially ruminants are susceptible. So one of the worldwide, or there's actually a few plants worldwide that are called local weed, and they can be especially prevalent in the western U.S. So there are some sources of foods that humans eat that are good sources of selenium. Those would include Brazil nuts, cereal grains, specific kinds of fish, eggs, mushrooms. So all those things sound like a pretty healthy diet.
Right.
One of the things we didn't mention in its uses is as dandruff shampoo, because it actually kills one of the fungi that causes dandruff. So if you're a Head and Shoulders guy, I would suppose you're absorbing plenty of selenium.
I'm going to get a little
I don't have that problem because I don't have any hairs.
I was just going to jump in, Mickey, and say I'm going to take a little poke at you here. For listeners who've seen your photo, they know that you're not a Head and Shoulders guy.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I think we'll finish here on a note, a little anecdote that I can tell you. the Grants Mineral Belt of New Mexico, and that's about 90 miles west of me, still remains the largest single district in the world for uranium production, although it's produced little since the mid-1980s. But during the uranium prospecting boom in the Colorado Plateau in the late 1940s to early 1950s, there was a Navajo prospector, sheep herder, and medicine man. Nice. Obviously a really smart guy who was fluent in four languages. His name was Paddy Martinez. And he noticed his sheep were dying when they were grazing a particular area. And because he was a prospector, he got in the idea that it was because of heightened uranium in the plants that they were eating. And there was a lot of local weed around, and I know what local weed looks like, and mm-hmm. I think we'll probably post a little photo when we tweet this interview showing a photograph of local weed in the Grants Mineral Belt. Anyway, to make a long story short, Paddy went out and staked this ground because his sheep were dying. It resulted in the discovery in 1950 of the first mine, the Haystack Mine, on Santa Fe Railroad lands. But it actually turned out that it was caused by selenium uptake in local weed. And interestingly enough, selenium is associated with the uranium ores of the Colorado Plateau and the Grants Mineral Belt. So that would be qualify as one of the first biogeochemical pathfinder elements, selenium for uranium prospecting.
What a great story. That's a fascinating story, Mickey. Great stuff. Nice way to wrap this one up. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks' time. Any thoughts on what you want to focus on?
Yeah, we're going to stick with the toxics, and we're going to talk about one that is absolutely one of the toxic, most toxic metals on the planet, and that is thallium. Mm. But once again, it is a geochemical pathfinder for gold ores. So we'll explore thallium next time.
Okay, great stuff. Talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Mickey.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Folt, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.